I decided to visit my wife at her job as a CEO. At the entrance, there was a sign that said, "Authorized personnel only." When I told the guard I was the CEO's husband, he laughed and said, "Sir, I see her husband every day. There he is, coming out right now." So, I decided to play along. The security guard at Meridian Technologies laughed when I told him I was Lauren's husband. "Sir, I see her husband here every day. There he is right now, actually." He pointed toward the glass doors. A man in a charcoal Tom Ford suit was walking through the lobby. Early 40s, confident stride, expensive watch catching the afternoon light. The kind of guy who looked like he belonged on the cover of Forbes. "Mr. Sterling," the guard called out. "Your wife's still in her 3-0 meeting. Should be done in about 20. The man, Frank Sterling, according to his security badge, nodded and headed toward the elevator bank. He hadn't seen me yet. I was standing off to the side, holding a takeout bag from Osteria, Lauren's favorite Italian place downtown. My heart was doing something strange in my chest. Not racing, just stopping and starting, like a car engine misfiring. 28 years. I'd been married to Lauren for 28 years, and apparently, she had another husband at work. Frank pressed the elevator button, pulled out his phone, started scrolling. Every instinct I had screamed at me to confront him, to walk over there and ask him what the hell he thought he was doing, calling himself my wife's husband, to make a scene, to demand answers. But something stopped me. Maybe it was the way the security guard had said it, so casual, so certain, like it was common knowledge, like everyone knew, everyone, except me. "You know what?" I said to the guard, keeping my voice steady. "I think I have the wrong building. I'm looking for Gerald Pharmaceuticals, not Meridian Tech." The guard looked confused. "You said you were Mrs. Sterling's husband." I said I was a friend of the family. "Gerald's my name. Must have gotten my wires crossed." I forced a laugh. "Been a long day." I set the takeout bag on the security desk. "Actually, could you make sure Lauren gets this? Just say Gerald dropped it off. Family friend." The guard shrugged. "Sure thing." I walked out before my legs could give out. I'd been married to Lauren since 1996. Met her when we were both 23. Me, fresh out of my accounting degree. Her finishing her MBA at Northwestern. She was brilliant, ambitious. The kind of woman who made plans in 5-year increments and actually followed through. I was the steady one. The practical one. The guy who managed our finances. Kept our home running. Made sure the bills were paid and the retirement accounts were funded. Lauren always said I was her foundation. That she could take risks in her career because she knew I'd keep everything stable at home. She'd climbed fast. Director at 30. VP at 35. CEO of Meridian Technologies at 43. A tech company specializing in AI-driven logistics software. She'd turned it from a struggling startup into a $200 million operation in 8 years. I was proud of her. So damn proud. I'd supported every late night, every business trip, every weekend she spent reviewing financials instead of going to dinner with me. Because that's what you do when you love someone. You support their dreams. We didn't have kids. Lauren had never wanted them. Said they'd derail her career trajectory. I'd been disappointed at first, but I'd accepted it. Her career was her baby. I understood that. Or I thought I did. Now I was sitting in my car in the Meridian Technologies parking lot, hands gripping the steering wheel, trying to process what I'd just seen. Frank Sterling, Lauren's VP of operations. I'd met him exactly once at a company holiday party 2 years ago. Tall guy, charismatic. Lauren had introduced him as one of my rising stars and spent most of the evening talking shop with him while I made small talk with the other spouses. I'd thought nothing of it. Why would I? I trusted my wife. But the security guard had called him Mr. Sterling. Had said he saw Lauren's husband every day. Not boyfriend, not affair partner, husband. I didn't go home right away. Couldn't face the empty house, the one I'd spent the day cleaning, the one where I'd made Lauren's favorite lasagna for dinner, the one where I'd been planning to surprise her with tickets to see Hamilton next month for our anniversary. Instead, I drove to a coffee shop 3 blocks away and sat in a corner booth with a black coffee I didn't drink. My phone buzzed at 6:47 p.m. "Lauren, working late again. Don't wait up. Love you." I stared at that message for a long time. Love you. Did she? Did she actually love me? Or was I just, what, the backup plan? The safety net? The guy who paid half the mortgage while she lived a double life? I typed and deleted a dozen responses before settling on, "Okay, there's lasagna in the fridge." 3 dots appeared. Disappeared. Appeared again. "You're the best. See you late tonight." I put my phone face down on the table and tried to breathe. Lauren came home at 11:23 p.m. I was in the living room pretending to read a book. Actually, I'd been staring at the same page for 3 hours. "Hey," she said, dropping her bag by the door. She looked tired, hair slightly mussed, lipstick faded. "How was your day?" I asked. My voice sounded normal. I was surprised by that. "Exhausting. Back-to-back meetings all afternoon. Board presentation at 4. Then Frank and I had to go through the Q3 projections." She headed to the kitchen. "Did you say there's lasagna?" "Yeah, in the fridge." I listened to her move around the kitchen. The microwave humming. The refrigerator opening and closing. The familiar sounds of my wife existing in our home. Our home. Was it even our home anymore? Or had that become a lie too? She came back with a plate of reheated lasagna and sat in the armchair across from me. "This is perfect. I'm starving. I actually stopped by your office today," I said casually. "Brought you lunch from Osteria." She paused, mid-bite, just for a second, a tiny hesitation that most people wouldn't notice. "But I'd been married to her for 28 years, I noticed. "You did?" "I didn't get anything. I gave it to Frank Sterling. Figured he could pass it along." "Oh," she took another bite, chewed, swallowed. "He didn't mention it. Maybe it got lost in the shuffle. Busy day, you know." She was lying, perfectly. Not a single crack in her composure. "How is Frank?" I asked. "Nice guy? He's great. Best VP I've ever worked with. Really gets the vision, you know? We're in sync on pretty much everything." "In sync. That's good. Important to have a strong working relationship." "Absolutely." She smiled at me. The same smile I'd fallen in love with 28 years ago. "Thanks for trying to bring me lunch, though. That was sweet." "Anytime." We sat there for a while, her eating lasagna, me pretending to read, like a normal married couple on a Tuesday night, except nothing was normal anymore. I waited until she was asleep. Lauren always slept deeply. Years of running on caffeine and adrenaline had trained her to shut down completely when she finally crashed. By midnight, she was out cold. I went to her study. The door was never locked. Why would it be? I was her husband. She trusted me. Her laptop was on the desk, closed but not locked. I knew her password, had known it for years. It was our wedding date, 306-1596. I opened the laptop, my hands shaking slightly, feeling like a criminal in my own home. Her email was already open, thousands of messages. I didn't know where to start, so I started with her calendar. The appointments looked normal at first glance. Meetings, board calls, conferences. But then I started noticing patterns. Dinner with F, 7 p.m. at Il Posto. That was 2 weeks ago. Il Posto was a romantic Italian restaurant in the West Loop. Candlelit tables, live piano music. Not a place you take your VP for a business dinner. Weekend retreat. Grand Geneva Resort scheduled for last month. I scrolled to the resort's website. $450 a night for the suites. Lauren had told me it was a women's leadership conference. I pulled up her credit card statements, found the charge for Grand Geneva. 2 rooms, both on the corporate card. No, wait, 1 room. The other charge was canceled. 1 room, 2 people. My stomach dropped. I kept digging. Found more dinners, more trips. A pattern spanning back nearly 3 years, but it was all coded, all deniable. Business dinners, corporate retreats, team building exercises. Except Frank's name appeared on every single one. I closed the laptop and went to the bedroom. Stood in the doorway watching Lauren sleep. She looked peaceful, innocent. I'd trusted her completely. Never questioned, never doubted. And she'd been lying to me for 3 years. The next morning, I called in sick to work. First time in 6 years. I was a senior accountant at Monroe & Associates, a mid-sized firm in the loop. Good job. Stable. Boring. The kind of career that pays the bills but doesn't make for interesting dinner party conversation. Lauren made 3 times what I made. I'd never resented that. Her success was our success, or so I'd thought. After Lauren left for work, kissing my forehead and telling me to feel better, I started really digging. I went through every drawer in her study, every file cabinet, every box in her closet, in the back of her jewelry drawer, hidden under a tangle of costume necklaces she never wore. I found a key, just a key, silver, standard apartment key, no label, but attached to it was a keychain tag with an address, Harborview Apartments, Unit 214. Harborview was a luxury apartment complex in River North. I'd driven past it dozens of times, 30-story building, floor-to-ceiling windows, the kind of place where a studio started at $2,500 a month. I grabbed the key and drove there. The parking garage had spaces marked with unit numbers. Space 214 had a black Mercedes GLE parked in it, Frank Sterling's car. I recognized it from the company parking lot. My hands were shaking as I took the elevator up to the second floor. Found Unit 214, the key fit. The door opened. Inside was a fully furnished apartment, not a temporary rental. A home, hardwood floors, modern furniture, fresh flowers on the coffee table. The air smelled like Lauren's perfume, Chanel No. 5, the expensive one she only wore for special occasions. Photos on the mantle showed Lauren and Frank at a beach, at a restaurant, on a hiking trail. In every single picture, Lauren wasn't wearing her wedding ring. I walked through the apartment in a daze. The kitchen had 2 sets of dishes, 2 coffee mugs on the counter, his and hers. The bedroom made me physically ill. A king-size bed with expensive linens, Lauren's clothes in the closet hanging next to Frank's suits, her shoes lined up next to his, like they'd been living together for years, like they were married. On the dresser, I found a folder labeled Future Plans in Lauren's distinctive handwriting. I opened it. Real estate listings. Houses in Evanston, Oak Park, Wilmette. All in the $800,000 to $1.2 million range, all circled with notes in the margins. Good schools nearby, schools, close to Frank's parents, love the kitchen, travel brochures, Santorini, Tokyo, New Zealand, dream honeymoon destinations, and underneath all of that, legal documents, divorce consultation summaries, dated from 18 months ago. Lauren had met with 3 different divorce attorneys, shopping for the best deal. The notes were clinical, cold, strategy, frame as irreconcilable differences, cite Gerald's lack of ambition and emotional distance, document instances of his failure to support my career growth, instances. She'd been building a case against me. There were pages of examples, times I'd supposedly undermined her by asking her to skip work events, times I'd been emotionally unavailable by not wanting to discuss corporate politics at dinner, times I'd shown lack of ambition by being content with my accounting job, every normal marital friction point reframed as evidence of my inadequacy. The most recent note dated 3 weeks ago. Timeline, file for divorce by January 2025, finalized by June, wedding with F by Christmas 2025. She had it all planned out, every detail. My replacement was already living with her part-time. Their future home was already picked out. I was just the obstacle she needed to remove. I photographed everything, every page, every document, every photo. Then I sat on their couch, in their apartment, in their secret life, and tried to process the fact that my 28-year marriage had been a lie for at least 3 years. I went back to my car and just drove. No destination, just drove. My phone rang at 3:47 p.m. Lauren. I let it go to voicemail. She called again at 4:15 p.m., then 4:32 p.m., then sent a text. Where are you? Are you feeling better? I didn't respond. At 6:00 p.m., I pulled into a parking lot and finally listened to her voicemails. Hey, honey, just checking in. Hope you're feeling better. Call me when you get this. Gerald. I'm getting worried. You're not answering. Are you okay? Seriously, where are you? I'm about to call hospitals. Please call me back. The concern in her voice sounded so real, so genuine. She was good, really good. I called her back. Oh, thank God, she answered immediately. Where have you been? I was so worried. Just drove around. Needed to clear my head. I'm fine. You scared me. Are you coming home? Home. What a joke. Yeah, I'll be there soon. Good. I'm leaving work early. I'll pick up Thai food on the way. Your favorite. My favorite. She still remembered my favorite food. Still pretended to care about the small details. Sounds good. Love you, she said. Yeah, I replied. You too. I hung up before she could hear the crack in my voice. That night, we ate Thai food at our dining room table. Lauren told me about her day. Some crisis with a client, a difficult board member, the usual corporate drama. I nodded in the right places, made appropriate comments, played the role of supportive husband, all while knowing that in a few months, she planned to divorce me and marry Frank Sterling. After dinner, she suggested we watch a movie. We settled on the couch, her head on my shoulder, just like we'd done 1,000 times before. Except now I could smell her perfume, the expensive one, and I knew she'd been at that apartment today, living her other life. life with her other husband. Gerald, she said during a quiet moment in the movie. Yeah? Are we okay? You seem distant. Distant, that word from her notes. Part of her case against me. I'm fine, just not feeling great still. Okay, she squeezed my hand. Let me know if you need anything. I will. We finished the movie, went to bed. She fell asleep almost immediately, curled on her side. I lay awake until 3 a.m., staring at the ceiling, planning my next move. The next morning, I called in sick again. Lauren left for work at 7:15 a.m., kissing my forehead and telling me to rest. The second she was gone, I went back to her study. I'd been an accountant for 22 years. I knew how to find financial irregularities, and now that I knew what I was looking for, the pattern was obvious. Our joint checking account showed consistent deposits from both our paychecks. Mine, $6,200 monthly after taxes. Lauren's, roughly $11,000 monthly after taxes. But our expenses, mortgage, utilities, groceries, insurance, everything, came to about $8,500 monthly. We should have been saving about $8,700 a month. Over 3 years, that should be over $300,000 in savings. Our savings account had $47,000. Where had $250,000 gone? I pulled up Lauren's personal credit card. The one she claimed was for business expenses that get reimbursed. Harborview Apartments, $3,200 monthly rent for 3 years, $115,200. Furniture, $24,000 in purchases from West Elm, Pottery Barn, Crate and Barrel. Travel, $31,000 to various luxury destinations. Dining, hundreds of charges at expensive restaurants. She'd been funding her entire secret life with our joint money, my money. While I'd been eating leftovers and driving a 10-year-old Honda Civic, she'd been playing house with Frank Sterling in a $3,200 a month apartment using money I'd earned. I documented everything, downloaded 3 years of bank statements, credit card records, investment account transfers. Then I started looking at Meridian Technologies' corporate filings. This was where my accounting background really paid off. I knew how to read financial statements, how to spot irregularities, how to see the story behind the numbers, and the story was damning. Lauren had been restructuring the company, quietly, without board approval, to position Frank Sterling as her successor. She'd moved resources into his department, given him control over key accounts, positioned him for a promotion to COO, a position that didn't exist yet. She was building him a golden ladder to the top while making herself look like a kingmaker. But she'd done it by redirecting company resources without proper authorization, by making financial decisions that benefited her personal relationship rather than shareholder interests. That was corporate misconduct, possibly fraud. I took screenshots of everything, organized it into folders, built a timeline. Then I called Richard Morrison. Richard Morrison was the chairman of Meridian Technologies' board of directors. I'd met him twice at company events. Retired hedge fund manager, late 60s, sharp as a tack. Gerald Hartman, I said when he answered. Lauren's husband. We met at the holiday party 2 years ago. Of course. How are you? Is Lauren all right? She's fine. I'm actually calling about some concerns I have regarding the company. A pause. What kind of concerns? The kind that involve unauthorized corporate restructuring and misuse of company resources. Do you have time to meet today? Another pause. Longer this time. I can be at your office in 2 hours. I work from home. I'll text you the address. Richard Morrison arrived at 2:00 p.m. sharp. Tall, silver-haired, wearing a suit that probably cost more than my car. I offered him coffee. He accepted. We sat in my living room, the room where Lauren and I had watched movies and celebrated anniversaries and built a life together. The room that was apparently just a set piece in her double life. Show me what you've got, Richard said. I pulled out my laptop and walked him through everything. The apartment, the photos, the divorce planning documents, the corporate restructuring. His expression grew darker with every revelation. Jesus Christ, he muttered when I showed him the financial irregularities. She's been redirecting capital expenditure budgets without board approval, as far as I can tell. And specifically to benefit Frank Sterling's department. Why would she do that? I pulled up the photos from the apartment. Richard's jaw tightened. They're having an affair? More than that. They're living together part-time. She's planning to divorce me and marry him. And she's been positioning him to take over the company. That's a massive conflict of interest. She has a fiduciary duty to the board, to the shareholders. He stopped, ran a hand through his hair. Do you have copies of all this? Everything's in this folder. I handed him a USB drive. Bank records, corporate filings, photos, timeline, all of it. I need to call an emergency board meeting. I figured. He stood up. Gerald, I'm sorry for what she's done to you personally, but also, thank you. If this had gone unchecked much longer, the damage to the company could have been catastrophic. I'm not doing this for revenge, I said, though that was partly a lie. I'm doing it because it's the truth, and I'm done pretending not to see what's right in front of me. Richard shook my hand. I'll be in touch. Lauren came home at 6:15 p.m., earlier than usual. I was making dinner, chicken stir-fry, something simple, when she walked in. One look at her face told me Richard had already called the emergency board meeting. You son of a bitch, she said. Her voice was shaking. You called Richard Morrison? My own husband is trying to destroy my career? I kept stirring the vegetables. Didn't turn around. I shared some information I thought the board should have. That's all. Information? You showed him private photos. You went through my personal files. Your personal files in our shared apartment. Your personal life funded by our joint bank account. She grabbed my arm, spun me around. This is different. This is my professional reputation. And sleeping with your VP while restructuring the company to benefit him personally? That's professional? Her face went pale. What do you want? She asked quietly. Money? The house? What? I don't want anything from you, Lauren. You set this in motion 3 years ago. I'm just refusing to be the fool while you execute your plan. What plan? I pulled out my phone, showed her the photos I'd taken at the apartment, her face in every picture, the folder labeled Future Plans. This plan, the one where you divorce me by January, marry Frank by Christmas, and live happily ever after in your Evanston dream home. She sat down heavily on a kitchen chair. How did you? I found the key to your other life. Gerald, 28 years, Lauren. I supported every decision you made, every late night, every business trip, every sacrifice, because I loved you, because I thought we were building something together. We were, no, you were building an exit strategy, and I was funding it. She started crying. Real tears this time, not the manipulative kind. I'm sorry. I never meant for for it to happen like this. How did you mean for it to happen? Were you going to tell me before or after you filed for divorce? She didn't answer. That's what I thought. I turned off the stove, grabbed my keys. Where are you going? She asked. Hotel. I'll have divorce papers drawn up by Monday. Wait, there's nothing left to say, Lauren. You made your choice years ago. I'm just catching up. I filed for divorce that Monday. Hired Jennifer Kowalski, a family law attorney with 23 years of experience. She looked at my evidence and whistled. This is one of the clearest cases of marital misconduct I've ever seen. The secret apartment, the financial deception, the documented timeline of her planning to leave you. You're going to do very well in this divorce. I don't care about doing well. I just want out. You should care. She used marital funds to support an affair. That's financial infidelity. Illinois law takes that seriously. The board meeting happened that same afternoon. I wasn't there, but Richard called me at 5:47 p.m. Frank Sterling has been terminated effective immediately. Lauren's on administrative probation. Her authority is severely restricted pending a full investigation. And the restructuring? Being reversed. We've hired a forensic accountant to do a complete audit. If we find she violated fiduciary duty or committed fraud, she could face criminal charges, not just termination. Jesus. She built this house of cards, Gerald. You just knocked it down. Lauren called me that night. I was in a Marriott near O'Hare, eating takeout Chinese and watching ESPN. You've destroyed everything, she said. She was crying. Frank lost his job. The board is investigating me. My career is over. How could you do this? How could I? My voice was ice. You spent 3 years planning my replacement. You stole $250,000 from our joint account to fund your affair. You committed corporate fraud to benefit your lover, and you're asking how I could do this? I was going to tell you. When? After you filed for divorce? After you married Frank by Christmas like you planned? Silence. You knew about that? I know everything, Lauren. The apartment, the lawyers, the timeline, the real estate listings, all of it. Please. Her voice broke. We can fix this. I'll end things with Frank. We can go to counseling. I'll do anything. Frank already lost his job because of you. And now you want to abandon him too? At least be consistent in who you betray. That's not fair. Fair? I laughed. It sounded bitter even to me. You want to talk about fair? You spent 28 years building my trust just so you could execute the perfect betrayal. You documented every small argument as evidence against me. You built a legal case while I was cooking dinner and doing laundry and supporting your career. I loved you. No, you loved what I provided. Stability, financial security, a foundation you could stand on while you built your empire. And the second you found someone who fit your life better, you started planning to trade me in. It wasn't like that. It was exactly like that. And you know what the worst part is? You were going to make me the villain. All those notes about my lack of ambition, my emotional distance, my failure to support your career. You were going to divorce me and make it my fault. She was sobbing now. Please, Gerald. 28 years. That has to mean something. It did. Past tense. You killed it when you got the key to apartment 214. I hung up. She tried calling back 6 times. I blocked her number. The divorce took 4 months. Lauren fought it initially, but Jennifer was right. The evidence was overwhelming. I got the house. She got to keep her car and her damaged reputation. The board investigation concluded that Lauren had violated her fiduciary duty by restructuring the company to benefit her personal relationship. She was forced to resign in March 2025. No golden parachute, no generous severance, just gone. Frank Sterling filed a lawsuit against both Lauren and Meridian Tech, claiming wrongful termination. It was dismissed. Turns out having an affair with your CEO and benefiting from unauthorized corporate restructuring is actually a fireable offense. Last I heard, they broke up 3 months after everything collapsed. Frank blamed Lauren for ruining his career. Lauren blamed Frank for not being worth the sacrifice. Neither of them took any responsibility for their own choices. I sold the house in June. Too many memories, too many ghosts. Bought a condo in Lakeview. Smaller, simpler. Mine. Started dating again in August. Nothing serious, just testing the waters, learning to trust again. It's slow going. My therapist, Dr. Sarah Chen, clinical psychologist with 18 years of experience, says that's normal. That betrayal trauma takes time to heal, that I shouldn't rush it. I'm not rushing anything anymore. One day at a time. One choice at a time. One truth at a time. I ran into Lauren once, about 8 months after the divorce finalized. She was at Whole Foods, looking at organic vegetables. She'd lost weight, looked tired. Our eyes met. She froze. I nodded. Kept walking. She didn't follow me. Part of me wondered if I should feel sorry for her. She'd lost everything. Her career, her relationship, her reputation. But then I remembered apartment 214, the folder labeled future plans, the cold, calculated notes about building a case against me, and I didn't feel sorry anymore. I just felt free. 2 years after everything exploded, I got a LinkedIn message from Frank Sterling. I know you have no reason to talk to me, but I wanted to apologize for everything. I knew she was married. I knew what we were doing was wrong. I told myself the marriage was already over, that we were in love, that it justified everything. It didn't. You deserved better. So did everyone at Meridian. I'm sorry. I stared at that message for a long time, then I closed it without responding. Some apologies come too late to matter. Some betrayals don't get forgiveness, and sometimes the best response to someone who helped destroy your life is just silence. People ask me sometimes if I regret how I handled it, if I should have confronted Lauren privately, given her a chance to explain. The answer is no, because she'd had 3 years to explain, 3 years to tell the truth, 3 years to choose our marriage over her affair. She chose Frank, chose the apartment, chose the future she was building without me. I just made sure everyone else knew what she'd chosen. 3 years after the divorce, I'm sitting in my condo on a Saturday morning, drinking coffee and reading the news. My phone buzzes. A text from my girlfriend, Amy, someone I met at a bookstore who knows my whole history and chose me anyway. Brunch at 11? I'm thinking that French place you love. I smile and text back. Perfect. See you there. I put down my phone and look out the window at Lake Michigan. The water's gray today, choppy with wind. Behind me, my home is quiet, small, honest. No secret apartments, no hidden lives, no carefully constructed lies, just truth. Simple, painful, free. And you know what? That's enough. That's more than enough. That's everything.